Welcome back, everybody, to the 6 Yard Box podcast of the Juventus Official Fan Club of Toronto. This is episode 19. I'm your host, Joe Chiraco. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, president of JOFC Toronto, John Groh, and director of the board, James Martino. So thanks for joining me on another episode, gentlemen. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us on this month's episode. We have a lot to get to, both domestically for our team and internationally also. But before we begin on some tough news lately from our squad, we have some exciting news on behalf of the Juventus Club of Toronto. Over the last month or so, we have been resuming our in-person watch parties now that restrictions have finally lifted after a couple of years. We're so excited to see you guys back. We had some pretty great turnouts the last few games. For those members out there that are listening, you'll find all the information sent out weekly in your email inboxes. But for those listening, we are now watching our games at 551 Jevlin Drive in Vaughan at the Ferrari Club of Toronto, another, our sister team, under the same umbrella of Exor. So we're very happy and gracious for them to be hosting us. And obviously, congratulations on Ferrari winning, going 1-2 this past weekend, which was great. We love seeing our teams do so well. So if you're in the GTA, you can come by. That's 551 Jevlin Drive. That's near Ansley Grove and Highway 7 in Vaughan. We'd love to see you there. Come by, become a member, and enjoy a unique viewing experience with passionate fans. And if you haven't been, if you're not a member and you would like to sign up, you can do so online. Very easy process at jofctoronto.com. That's jofctoronto.com. So now that that's out of the way, guys, unfortunately, we have to get to some unfortunate news. This is like the third year in a row where we've had to talk about Juventus exiting the round of 16 in the Champions League. For those that maybe haven't been caught up yet, Juventus was eliminated last week by the defending Europa League champions, Villarreal, from the round of 16. So no more Champions League for us. Third year in a row, 2020 Lyon, 2021 Porto, and 2022 Villarreal. So we've got all of Southern Europe covered through elimination. A very frustrating game for many of us. John, as president of our club and the most outspoken fan out of us, I'll hand the mic over to you to give your thoughts on, now that we've had a few days to digest that unfortunate loss.
Look, is it disappointing? Did we think we could go on? It was disappointing knowing how we started. We started off on putting Villarreal on their back foot. We high-pressed. We weren't giving them a lot of space in order to set up play and get adjusted to the game. So they knew that. They knew they had to weather the storm with us. We came out exactly how we should have come out. Unfortunate bounces, not going in, hitting a crossbar, headers directly at the goalie that on any other given day were hitting the back of the twine and putting us ahead. This is where your injuries catch up to you at the end of the year. We're in March. We have a slew of injuries, key players out that would make the difference. And this is how I played it out. When you have your substitute, or what you would consider your substitute starting, and having a substitute to a substitute, you're losing quality and you're losing ability to look down your bench and feel confident that you're going to go and make a decision that's not going to create a blowout. As contrary to what people may think, it's a false, although 3-0, it's a false scoreline. I don't believe the second penalty was there against De Ligt. I don't know how you expect someone to fall and block a ball, but you know, he's got to break his fall. Turned, his arm was in the path. That for me wasn't a penalty shot. Again, that's at the discretion of the referee and VAR. Obviously they saw it a different way, and that's fine. That's my interpretation. The team did what they had to do. Morata came out and he was active. Vlahovic was doing his thing. You know, we had We had the team that was really moving forward. Then in the second half, it was a matter of time. Emery knew what he had. He could look on the roster sheet as much as anybody else could at the beginning of the game. And when you have two goalies plus three newly returned players from injury, and then you have an 18-year-old, a defenseman, and a striker at your fingertips for substitutions, Allegri wanted to manage any movement at that point. Again, we can find flaw in our coach if it wasn't for a very sloppy tackle, for which I believe Rugani played a solid game up until creating that you know, again, sloppy tackle that comes with inexperience. You put a Bonucci and Chiellini in that position. Maybe Chiellini puts him to the grass, but I mean, I don't think he gets the ball before he gets the leg of the player. The player made a meal of it. I was surprised just based the way that the player dove. There was contact, so because there's contact, it's a penalty shot. I'm going to say a tale of two teams. First 45, very strong, very promising. Time catches up, you get tired. They put all their wind in their sails in the first 45. They were drained. Again, Emery, coach of Villarreal, knew that. He put in fresh legs, of which did not compromise the quality on the pitch. Whereas if Allegri made decisions, he would have been compromising health and quality, not knowing if Chiellini, Bernardeschi, and Dybala were fully fit to play a full team, full game, or half the game. We all know what happened in Lyon a couple of years ago when Sarri put in Dybala. He got injured after coming back. And that's something that Allegri has gone on record as saying that he did not want to happen to Paolo this time around. So kudos to the team. It just gives us fire for next year. And it also really exposes the weaknesses that we have. And I'm glad we lost in this round because it means we have to go through a renaissance and a restructuring of our team and looking at where we go from here on in.
Yeah. James, I wanted to get your points specifically on what you thought of the coaching decisions by Max Allegri.
Yeah. So when you look at it, if you're looking at it in a bubble and saying, okay, well, why didn't he put the subs on when Emery made his subs? One thing you got to remember is the majority of this team, of that lineup that played, Rabiot is not a starter. Rabiot's somebody who can guarantee him 90 minutes. Right now, everything is about fitness. And that's why he had to make some of the decisions that he made. So in a game like this, do you really think Rugani would start over Chiellini if he can give you 90 minutes? Honestly, he can't. And that's what happened to him this game is he's very limited with his choices. So when the game started, that first half was how Juve was supposed to play. But where I don't agree with John is I didn't see them pressing at all in that first half. Their keeper there, he might have had the ball for maybe about a good 10 seconds before you actually saw a press. I think the game plan was play possession. If we don't get the ball, drop back, and then we'll go back and get it. Save your energy. And that's what I felt the first half was. So by the time the second half came, they're already gassed. And what can you do? Now, it's 1-1 on the aggregate. At the time, it's still 0-0. So you're looking at extra time. So if you know Dybala can't give you 90 minutes already, are you going to put him on now and then goes to penalties? That was the decision why he was holding off on his subs. He was trying to maximize the guys who can give him minutes. Minute crunchers, they say it in basketball all the time, just somebody can eat minutes. And that's what Rabiot was on. And I was surprised Rabiot played the full 90. Who's the sub there? Locatelli came off for Bernardeschi. And then after the fact, we find out that Locatelli had COVID symptoms too. So here is a guy also not paying at his full potential, full health. So I'm going to cut Allegri the slack there because I know when you look in that bubble, you basically say, how can a team like Juve lose against a team, smaller club like that? Well, when you're missing the majority of your club, even though you had those three on the bench and they can't guarantee you the minutes, then yeah, you're handcuffing yourself as a club. And this is where the fitness has to be something when they do look at this rebuild of players at a certain age, can they hack it? Players who have this injury history and are up for renewal, do we re-sign them or not? And this is, it's the flag that's up there now, that if we want to compete in three different trophies, we got to build a squad that's going to have the depth for it. Now, I know after that Champions League game, you hear people screaming for youth. Would you really trust an 18-year-old kid in a game of that magnitude while you're down and not to take a silly foul? So everybody's captain hindsight, but I understand why Allegri did what he did. It was a risk because he was playing for the extra time. But once that goal went in on a questionable, very slight contact, that changed everything. And then the team itself folded when he did put on those stars who were supposed to bring them back.
Yeah, I agree with both your points. It's just disappointing to see the same thing, same result 3 years in a row. I have to give the coach of or Villarreal credit, and people will say, "Oh my, we lost to Villarreal. Like, we're not supposed to lose to teams like that." Well, I mean, they're still the Europa League winners, the defending champions, and one thing that people will say, like, criticize, oh yeah, they just won the Europa League, but winning knockout stage games and winning tournaments is no small feat. I mean, you had a guy, Unai Emery, who outcoached Allegri. The guy has won 4 Europa Leagues. He's won 4 European trophies. The guy knows how to win in Europe. The guy knows how to manage games. He knows how to analyze opponents, and he knows how to win knockout football, which Italian teams do not know how to do and haven't been able to do because they have not consistently been in the Champions League long enough. It's not the players. It's not the style per se, not entirely. But it's just the inexperience, the players on the field, a lot of them, some of them, the problem is with our roster is there's players who are too raw and too green, but there's also players who are best or past their best before date, and they really should be looking to move on. And that's a job for management to do in the off season. I still think there's some lingering corpses from years previous that are still weighing down the team. And hopefully those players will be moved out and a new refresh or a couple additions will help. But really, I think management's got to look at it and say, let's establish a core and ride out this core for 5 years, just like we did in 2011, where eventually in year 4, we made the Champions League final in 2015 because it was the same core players that played together year over year over year, and they only improved. So if you're adding new players and a new coach every year, it's really difficult for a team to catch that momentum. And Villarreal has been a squad that's been put together for the last few years. They won together a trophy last year. That's a huge intangible that people are overlooking. And I think even in years prior, 2020 elimination from Lyon, who was the coach? Rudy Garcia, a guy who coached many years in Serie A and knew Juventus really well. And even when he coached Roma, they were not easy games when we faced his teams. A year later, Sergio Conceição, another guy who played in Serie A for many years. He knows Italian football. He knows Juventus really well. He was able to match up accordingly. And this year, Unai Emery, who's been winning trophies and coaching against various European teams, also was able to spot that out. So it's not so much the coach or the players. It's a combination of both plus injuries. And it was just a knockout fixture that unfortunately was doomed to fail. And, we can try and look at it next year in a positive light, but we got to get to the Champions League first. And I think we will, which we'll get to shortly in the episode. But, it is what it is, and we have to move on. And it's still painful, but, 5-6 days later, it is what it is. And honestly, we don't deserve to even, we can't even beat any of the teams in the quarters right now. I mean, maybe Benfica, perhaps, but even that, I'm second guessing. But other, like, we're very, very, very far away from teams like Bayern, Man City, and Liverpool. We're not even close. Like, we can't even train. We couldn't even beat their bench, to be honest, at this stage. That's how good they are. And the gap between the elite teams and everybody else has never been greater. And unfortunately, we have to humble ourselves, get rid of that arrogance that's persisted in this team for the last few years, and realize, like, we're not as good as these teams. And that's why we were so successful 10 years ago, because we knew heading into those Champions League games in 2012, 13, 14, we were not the Barcelonas, the Real Madrids, the Bayerns. But that's how we got that success. And I think we're trying to punch above our weight, but we're not even winning in our weight class. So again, management, coaching has a lot of work to do in the offseason, and hopefully they will fix up those issues. But speaking of the players, which I mentioned just earlier, we had news on a much drawn out saga with Paulo Dybala and his contract situation. John, I'll turn it over to you to address the latest from that scenario as of today's recording.
Yeah, so obviously this has been drawn out from October of last year. It's, you know, there was a gentleman's agreement apparently, and moving forward as the season progresses, there's been unfortunate situation with Paulo's health, which limits his amount of playing time and the ability to help the team in key moments. Obviously, you know, no one wants to see a player injured, anybody from that matter. But, you know, that may have been the saving grace for the team, because it would have been financially a massive mistake. Paulo's done amazing things for this club, but over the course of the last 4 years, three have been riddled with injury and little or no involvement in key games. And those key games, we all know, is Champions League. There's stats out there that shows the number of minutes he's played in games of knockout stage or of significance, and the only one that sticks out is the game against Barcelona at the Allianz, where he popped in two beautiful goals, where we beat them. I'm not mistaken, there was a third goal by Chiellini, and we won 3-0, if I'm not mistaken. So outside of that, we have a player that, unfortunately, and again, being a person who owns their own business and has employees, you weigh, and it's like an employee's, year end review. And at this point in time, you know, if you're going a certain direction, and, you know, I know James touched upon talking about youth, and this is one of the things that, you know, just not to get off topic, you know, for really hammering a guy like Allegri, the whole team's filled with youth, and what they want to bring is youth. So we haven't been this young in years in terms of where we're going. So that's just a support on the coach and, you know, some of the pieces of management, sorry, that see the opportunities. But Paulo's going to be 29, a 4-year deal for someone who's riddled with injury. If this was us looking at a 24-year-old, I can see Juventus potentially taking a stab and a gamble, but that's not the case. Tying yourself down to a player for 4 years, which gives you into 33, that's old. That's older for a playmaker, an attacking midfielder, or second punta, whatever you want to call him, because we had the discussion. We don't even know, truly what position he holds, Paulo, right now. He doesn't fit 100% in terms of where we want to be. I wish him all the best. I really don't want to get harsh on his. I mean, numbers speak for themselves. It's a stat. You know, he hasn't played enough. He hasn't been impactful enough. If I got to call out one goal that was the last impact goal from Dybala, it was the goal against Inter during the first lockdown in March of 2020, when we won 2-0 in the first empty game stadium at the Allianz as a COVID pandemic started. That's it.
And James, do you have anything else to follow up on the situation of Paulo likely or pretty much not coming back?
Yeah, so to touch what John said, the stat being out there, we had it on our social media, and it was a stat from Tuto Marchetto Web. And in the last four Champions League knockout phase, Dybala played 190 minutes of 720 that were available. So that pretty much speaks. And the thing is, it was always in the quarterfinals. So that also meant that this time every year, he's been injured. So is that a question on his fitness? And it's not like a lingering knee injury, something like an ACL tear or something. It's something muscular. So there's something that's happening there. It's a fitness issue. And it continues to happen. And he's not the same player who scored the brace against Barcelona. So I understand with the dollar values and why they stepped away. Now, I think Juve as a club did everything possible for him to succeed. They gave him the number 10. They made him the vice captain. They did all these little, not financial, but emotional things to try to drive that for him to be that take that next step and be that elite leader, but it never developed and he never grew. And that's why I think they made the tough decision to basically say at the end of the season, we're moving on. And that decision was also made with the transfer for Big Vlad. So he is now going to be the focal point of this team and Dybala will have his opportunity to go elsewhere. Now, where is he going to fit elsewhere? We hear the rumor mills that they're flying. Atletico Madrid apparently is a big admirer of his. I think he will do well in Spain, especially in that kind of 4-4-2 style of Atletico. I'm hearing England that Conte is an admirer, but I love Conte. I know it's controversial to say it, but I just can't see Dybala fitting in that style. And then the other one that we keep hearing is the Inter. And this is the one to me that will really test the true loyalty. It's not that he's going to go to another club and then go to Inter. He's going to go directly from Juve to Inter. And if that's the case, I can't think of any player off the top of my head who did that direct move. So especially for someone who you know, apparently turned down other moves for the love of the shirt. So it's going to be an interesting summer market to see what happens. It's also going to be interesting to see how he takes it as a professional during the rest of the season. There's still tons of games to play, still tens of minutes. He's got to play for the club right now to honor what his current contract is. But also he's got to be playing for his future contract at another club. And that's how I would be talking if I'm Allegri and I pull him in the room. He needs to go in there and he wants the $8 million. Show it. Show somebody else that Juve made the mistake and you deserve that money. We'll see how the rest of the season goes.
Where do you guys think he's going? If you had to pick a team, where do you think he's going?
I don't think it's any one of those teams. I don't feel his value is where his agent, and this is another part of it. I think this is only my opinion from what I've read from different sources. They did not like his player representative. His agent is one. They don't like, apparently, the girlfriend. That this is where the change in Dybala also started occurring. And we do know that his brother with some sort of business partner that was there too. So somewhere along that relationship soured, and he's hearing from this, you know, this close knit group that his value is worth more than what is out there. Now, at one point, could he get that money? Yes, he had no injuries. He was that style of player, you know, still spectacular goals. However, he has the injuries now, and the world changed. We have a COVID environment. The clubs are not dropping that kind of money for a player of his stature who can you put him in top five of the world at one time? 10, maybe. But this is at his prime. Now he's nowhere near that. I wouldn't even put him in the top 20.
Well, not even top 30. I mean, the way he's played the last couple of years, good player, talented. Where is he going to go? I think if Atletico Madrid gets rid of a guy like João Felix or another one of their forwards, most likely in there in Spain. But I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's an Inter player by the summer. You know, he's got that relationship with Marotta. They'll probably pay him what he wants, and he'll be with you know, his friend Lautaro Martinez. There's a couple other Argentinians on the team, so he may it may be a good fit, I think, for both parties. But you know, it would be upsetting to see him go directly to Inter, as James mentioned. But it's a business, and it's a decision that has to be respected. And I think in the end, it's the right move. As I mentioned earlier, there's players who have overstayed their welcome that should have left a few years ago. And for Juventus to have any kind of success, they have to move on from these players. The sport has changed. There's no such thing anymore as players who play for one team for even 10 years anymore, never mind 20, like Del Piero or Totti or Xavi. That doesn't exist anymore. So you, as a team, as a modern football team, you have to be ready and willing to change players frequently and make sure that your scouting is on point to find the right fit. And right now, Paulo Dybala does not fit with the team. And spending more money on salary on him versus other players or another player, an individual player, would be a mistake. So it is what it is. You know, he served the team for 7 years. And if that's how it's going to go, then that's great. But, you know, to some fans online who are angry, we've had better players and we're going to have better players in the future. So all we care about really is trophies, and it's never been about the individual player. And I repeat, it has never been about the individual player. It's always been about the logo on the front of the team. That's how sports are meant to be consumed. That's why we love sports, because it's those colors, it's the flag, it's the crest. That's what we live and die for, not the individual player. So there will be better players. We have better players on our roster, and I think Juventus is going to be just fine. And Paulo will get a nice contract somewhere else, and he will be happy wherever that may be. So good luck to him if that's the case. I think we've still got, and as James mentioned, we still have 10 games or 8 games left in Serie A, and that's where we're going to be headed now. You know, we're fourth place right now. As it currently stands, Milan with 66 points, Napoli with 63, Inter with 60 with one game in hand, Juventus 59 points, and Atalanta in fifth with 51 points, but with a game in hand. So we put that little separation between us and Atalanta's poor form of late, although they've been doing well in Europe, which is good for the league. But John, I'll start with you, and then I'll get James's thoughts. Is this something you can see, that we can maintain that fourth place and maybe even chase for second or even first?
I said, look, man, I honestly think, you know, bad timing for this team all around. I think we're playing well enough to stay in that fourth position, barring this, you know, this Dybala saga. I would say that we had a very good chance of climbing close to or reaching Napoli in second place. Nothing's a gimme. The smaller teams, the minnows of the league, have proven that throughout the year that they'll take down a giant. You know, we have a very important game coming up against Inter. The stat is we haven't beaten anyone ahead of us right now in the standings. So catching at least one game would be phenomenal, and beating Inter at home and on the third, moving 2 points ahead of them, and then really putting the vice to Inter, because, you know, to going from first to potentially fourth, even with a game in hand, nothing's a given, nothing's a guarantee. We have a very good opportunity. If I look at our schedule, you know, Lazio, there's Fiorentina last fixture of the year, not going to be easy. That's in Firenze. You know, we have to be prepared. I think we're going to get, you know, the great thing, good news is the Salsa, the break, the international break will allow us to get key players back and outside of Chiesa and McKennie back and with some more minutes. And we'll give guys like Chiellini, Bonucci, even though they're playing, I don't know why they're even going. I know we have to make the World Cup, but, you know, this is, you know, this is crucial for the team as well. So hopefully they'll come back with some sort of rest and we'll be able to field a team where we can really, you know, go through a lineup and do the substitutions, complete substitutions at key time that will allow us to manage our team and their tolerance to the rest of the season. We still have a Coppa Italia semi-final game and then, you know, hopefully a final available to us. And, you know, we have 8 games. So potentially, you know, 10 games left on the year. Let's finish it off well. I think we're sitting well in terms of what the remaining fixtures are. Finishing off with 2. Again, exactly what Allegri did on the other day against Salernitana is exactly what he wanted to achieve against Villarreal. But obviously Villarreal is much more competitive and experienced than Salernitana. But I think we can do it. I think we can get up to 2nd. I think we can get there. Are we going to take it? I think we're going to push. And the team should be scared, especially if we have big Vlad scoring goals and having support from guys like Morata, who really found themselves in the second half of the season. I just, you know, what could have been if we had a full squad? You know, I think this team was made a huge turn against Roma, and it's unfortunate we lost Federico at that point, and then shortly thereafter, Weston McKennie.
It's certainly been tough on the injury front. James, is first place kind of too big of a long shot in your opinion, and should we expect to at least maintain 4th?
I think we're safe in 4th. Atlanta, they do this every year. They have a very hot start, and then around this time of the year, we see it with Gasperini's teams, because he's so hard on them, they kind of run out of gas. So we're seeing that there. So the team that we got to watch out for is, I wouldn't say is Atlanta, I would think is Roma, because they are now picking up some momentum. Abraham had a fantastic game in the Derby of the Capital the other day. So, and Mourinho, I mean, as much as we all can't stand him, you have to respect he is a winner. So I won't count them out. They're still there. Juve has put enough distance that they should be in good shape. When you look at the schedule, John mentioned the 2 games to worry about are Inter and Fiorentina. The other ones, they should bring home points. They've brought home points pretty much all for, I forget what the number we're at now, but it's
16.
So at 16, it's the longest streak in the top 5 leagues right now. So we just got to hope that momentum is still kicking there. Allegri still has the ability to motivate them to keep going. Now, Napoli, Inter, and Milan. We've seen Napoli lose a Scudetto in a hotel room before. So nothing throws past the mentality of that team. If all the cards are right, there's still a chance for the Scudetto. Very slight, but the chance is there. But I feel we could. 2nd is not something that we should blink an eye to. I think 2nd is definitely achievable, considering the 2 teams above us.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but I don't see the team dropping out of 4th. It's just, they'll grind out those 1-0 wins and play and park the bus if they have to. I think they'll get the results. As for the Scudetto, I just think it's Milan's year. They've got nothing else to play for. They're playing well. And Napoli, as you guys mentioned, I mean, they don't really have a heart and soul or any kind of grit whatsoever. So I count them out. Inter looks like they're kind of running out of steam, but they do have a game in hand. So things can happen. But for Milan, I mean, it would be a nice story if they won and kind of their first title in 11 years. And, you know, finally we would have, I think for the first time in, I think 20 years, you'll have three different winners in a row for Serie A, you know, Juventus in 2020, Inter 21, potentially Milan in 22, which would be good for the Italian football as a whole. So as long as we get the top four and if we can win the Coppa Italia, that'd be great. We keep our streak of winning a trophy at 11 years in a row. And really just the most important thing in European football is just make the Champions League, whether it's third, second, fourth, or winning the league, doesn't matter. You just got to finish in that top four. You've got to make the tournament. That's probably worth more than any trophy at this point. So I'm hoping that, I'm faithful that and confident that that will happen. So before we move on to the international side, James, what's the update on our Juventus women defending multiple champion team? They've got a big Champions League game actually coming up, I think this week or I believe later this week or next week in their bout. And also a big Champions League UEFA Youth Champions League win for Juventus as well.
Yeah, so the kids put on a show last week, a big win, and they are now in the semifinals of the Youth Champions League. So this is a great achievement. I know a lot of people criticize Juve without having a youth system, but the youth system is there. They have academies all over the world, and this is just showing that the club itself is not just the men's first team. There's a lot of other moving parts that are happening. So hats off to the kids for this big achievement. That you can watch on the Zone as well, so that it is available. You mentioned the Women's Champions League. Our women's team is also in the Champions League. That is all on the Zone. I just checked that. I got to double check that the schedule, and I didn't see it for this week. I think it's for next week, but check on the Zone to be sure. They won this weekend, Santa Giuseppe special, just pounded Napoli. Scoreline said 2-0, but it could have been a lot more. Our own Canadian, Julia Grosso, was all over the Juventus social media feeds and on TikTok. She just made this one run where she practically ran from our 18-yard box and threw everybody. She couldn't finish it, but it was an amazing run. And, you know, as a father, Italian Canadian father who's got daughters in soccer, to see a woman wearing a Juve jersey do that, it means a lot. And I think that's the other thing. I know John's the same as me. We're both girl dads, so it's different for us now than from when we were kids watching the women's game.
Totally true.
And actually, the game is this Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. So you can catch that on DAZN, which has the rights for this tournament. So that's this Wednesday. Yep. I believe it's the first leg. So that'll be at 1:45 p.m.
Yep. So if you try, my boss is trying to get a hold of me, I might be busy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like Julia Grosso has been sensational so far. And I think, I mean, Lyon is a tough, like Lyon has won a couple of these Champions League titles. So they're actually one of the best teams in Europe. It's going to be a really tough draw, but I think win or lose, it's great experience for these girls who have never been, Juventus has never made the knockout stage of this competition. I think this is only the second time they've qualified for the Women's Champions League, or it could be the first.
It's the second. It was a play-in before, so this is why it's only. Even though they've won the Serie A feminine multiple years in a row, but because of the play-in, this is only the second time they've been in that Champions League. But first knockout.
Yeah, so this is going to be a great experience for them, regardless win or lose, against one of the top teams in Europe. And you know what? As much as we bemoan the men's team, it's been very impressive to see the youth and women's team evolve. And Fabio Miretti scored the winning goal against Liverpool in the the youth Champions League, and he started, or he played rather, this past weekend. He's caught the eye of Allegri. He's, I believe, 19 years old, scored a ton of goals for the Primavera team as a midfielder. So that's another player where you may not need to find a midfielder out somewhere in the world when you've got him in your own backyard. Torino born and bred. I mean, it doesn't really, there's really no reason to not give the kid a chance. So we'll see how that develops. And again, the focus is on youth. We have some talent now that the B team is coming to fruition after a few years, and there's exciting times for Juventus going forward. And it's easy to look down or get down on the results of the senior men's team, but a lot to be proud of on the women and youth teams. Switching gears to the international game, something that really is of huge consequence. We have the World Cup qualifiers coming up for both Italy and Canada. Unfortunately, 5 years later, we're still in the same position as we were before, with a real risk to not make the World Cup, unprecedented two times in a row, which has never happened in the history of the Italian national team. We've got Thursday, 3:45 p.m. Against North Macedonia in Palermo. Recently, Coach Mancini has released his 33-squad roster with a few surprises and notable absences. But just on, we'll focus on the tie against Macedonia. North Macedonia, will be without Elmas, who is their best player, and he's had a great year for Napoli. He's actually suspended for this game. So, I mean, this is no reason to take them lightly at all, because, you know, underestimating an opponent is the first step in losing. So, but we have, it's a clear advantage. They're heavy favorites. Is there any concerns from either of you, James? I'll start with you. Any concerns that you have against Macedonia and potentially Portugal going in? Because these might be the two biggest games of these players' career, despite winning the Euro less than a year ago.
I think it's just, you have to take each game as it is. I mean, you can't look beyond Macedonia. You do, like you said, what you're doing is you're going to drag on a game that you should be able to finish off early and really focus on it. I mean, really what they should be doing is attack at all opportunity on this team. They do not have the firepower or the ability to counterattack. They're going to sit with players. They're going to play out, try, you know, sneak out a corner kick, free kick, something of the other, a mistake in the back line in order to capitalize. All you need is one opportunity, you know. And you know, Benfica proved that against Ajax in the second round knockout stage. It was a 71% to 70% or 69% ball possession, which is significant. And especially when a team, you can't be on that same, you have to really go for the throat and the jugular here. Like I said, I'm not trying to be a pessimist. I'm not confident. I'm a little bit disappointed with Mancini in his selection. I'm going to go out on a limb. It's disheartening. It's disappointing. It's actually borderline embarrassing as an Italian to see the way we stick with a certain type of player or a formula, or just, you know, hang ourselves on, hang our hats on one person or a couple of people going to the same. Well, I can use as many cliches as I want. I'm disappointed. I think the fact that Balotelli's not playing for me disgusts me, and they led the lad on, and it bothers me that this is still going on. And why we're going after João Pedro and not bringing in an Italian like Balotelli is a complete slap in the face of Balotelli and his willingness and commitment to see what he can do for this national team. And you know, there was a commitment from Mancini, and this almost makes me feel, I'm pretty sure most people have seen it, the Trapattoni Baggio debacle when he was told he was going to be on the 2002 team, and you know that never happened. So look, it doesn't surprise me that they're pulling stunts like this. Do I have faith in this team? No, to be very honest. They can go by Macedonia. You're either going to play Turkey or Portugal. And Turkey being one of the stingiest teams, and even though we beat them in the Euros, you don't catch them off their line or where they're not committed to their defensive strengths. You have a guy like Demiral who's dead center to thing. We may not even face Portugal. We may not even get there past Macedonia. I'm just giving you all options. That if we pay Turkey, you know, it's a guy like Demiral's had a great season with Atalanta, and Gasperini's been great for his confidence and his ability to grow as a central defender. I'm not with the forward attack. I don't care if Berardi scored his 100th goal. He's garbage. Sorry. Immobile, garbage. Sorry. Insigne doesn't care. He's moving over to Toronto to play in MLS. He could care less. He's going to make his money. Garbage. See you later. Bye. Who are you going to hang your hat on? Raspadori and Scamacca? With what experience? We're going to slap them in? You can slap them in against Macedonia. What do you think they're going to do against a Turkey or a Portugal? You think they're going to cause any significant heads to turn? It's great to have key players in the midfield, Barella being one of them. I think we have a very strong midfield. I think we have one of the strongest midfields in the world. But if you can't finish and we need a poacher, João Pedro on an answer? No offense. I'm not trying to be discriminatory. He's not Italian. And we have an Italian who's waiting to play. Then you go, as a Juventino, and all these people are going to be whatever. You bring in Tashilio. What about Calabria? Calabria is having a phenomenal season for Milan, captaining the team, really growing as a player. Where is he as part of this 33-man roster? I'm like, everyone likes to love Mancini because of the Cinderella story in last year for the Euros and what they accomplished. Well, that's done. Next, it's the World Cup. This team's going to miss the World Cup two competitions in a row. That's my prediction. Italy's not going to the World Cup.
That's a pretty bold statement. James, do you agree with that? Or, you know, barring, you know, under the assumption, let's assume Italy gets past Macedonia and Portugal gets by Turkey, which is no guarantee, because actually I would put it at a 60-40 for Portugal, but I think Turkey could easily win in a shootout or extra time. I think it could be, it definitely won't be a blowout, but assuming it's Italy versus Portugal, the game that Torontonians have been dreaming for 30 years, do you think we could beat Portugal? And that's again, under the, hypothetically.
I think there's many Juventini on that Italian national team that want a piece of Ronaldo. And if they are fit enough to play that game, I see them stuffing Ronaldo. And is that going to be enough? I hope so. I think we have not heard enough. I think little leaks and dribbles have come out. But it sounds to me like that Italian core that was at Juve, they really felt almost like they were dumped by him, like a girlfriend who just got dumped out of nowhere. So I think there's going to be a lot of emotional baggage to shut him down. So it would be a good game. Yeah, on paper, can they win? On paper, you would put the advantage to Portugal. But in a game like that, and this is why, even though Chiellini is going to go on one leg, there's nobody better that you want on that kind of game. So I kind of see him sitting for North Macedonia, and then they have him ready for that big game to man mark Ronaldo. So I would love to see that. To John's point about Balotelli, this is where we disagree. No coach knows him more than Mancini. And if he didn't have the confidence in him coming, you have to accept it. It's not just is he a center forward? There's other factors that are there. You know, I still, for me, I still see a guy, and I use the phrase from Bronx Tale, just wasted talent. And, you know, did his season this year deserve a call up? He got called up to that practice, but did he didn't do enough to impress Mancini to bring him for this critical time. And maybe that's part of the reason why he doesn't want him there, because he wasn't on that Euro Cup winning team. Is he gonna be a distraction in the locker room? So, you know, is it a safe play? It might be, but let's see. You know, I actually feel more confident about Canada going into this World Cup.
Yeah, we're going to get to Canada in just a second, but I have to say that I do believe Italy will make it barely. I think North Macedonia game will be maybe 1-0 or 2-0, not as comfortable as we think. And then, you know, whether it's playing away in Turkey, I don't really think it's the squad so much as the atmosphere that would be intimidating. However, if Italy can draw on their experience, whether it's Portugal or Turkey where they play, you know, they beat England in, you know, in a hostile, crazy, fanatical crowd, you know, last July. I think if they can draw from that experience, they can still pull off a win. But importantly, Italy is going to win on a couple of factors. One, Domenico Berardi has to be the best player on the field. He's the most informed player on the squad. You know, the midfield is good, but, you know, midfielders don't really score that many goals. So it's going to be up to Berardi to either score or set up somebody to score, whether it's Scamacca off the bench or Immobile, you know, finally showing his promise. I think Insigne is just exhausted and burned out. Like he seems just finished on the field. I don't know how much left he has in the tank. And that's concerning for TFC fans, because when he gets here in July, you know, how much could he possibly have in MLS, which is a more physical league? So if they can put either Lorenzo Pellegrini up front on the left and or Cristiano Biraghi at left back, you have two guys who can hit free kicks really well. It might come down to executing a free kick, either a cross or just scoring directly from a free kick. That's probably what it's going to have to take. And if Jorginho has to take a penalty, I don't know if I'm that confident in him scoring. I would put Immobile, because for as shitty as Immobile has been on the field, he's a great penalty taker. And I can bet my dollars that he'll score a penalty. He won't score in an open play, but on a penalty kick, I think there's very few out there who could score better than him. So it might come down to a free kick or a set piece. That's the margins are so thin. And unfortunately, Italy got themselves in. There's no one else to blame but them. And it's a real possibility we could miss it. But I think this time around, luck will smile on us. I think if we do end up facing Portugal, I wouldn't even worry about Cristiano Ronaldo. Diogo Jota is playing out of his mind. That's the guy you got to man mark the crap out of him, because that guy is having an amazing year for Liverpool, and Cristiano Ronaldo's finished. So I wouldn't worry too much about him. Now, I hope to God he doesn't prove me wrong and score a hat trick, because he has done, you know, he has proven people wrong before. But I just think the way Portugal plays, the coaching, like the guy doesn't utilize the best out of his team, and they're too defensive. That might be the downfall for Portugal, whether it's against Italy or Turkey. I could see them losing 1-0 to Turkey easily, because they just can't score. So it's going to be, man, we had the toughest path. It is going to be a very nervy next week and a half for Italian fans. But for Canadian fans, I think we're just waiting for the coronation of a moment 36 years in the making. So Canada is also playing three matches. They're at away to Costa Rica, I believe on Thursday night. And then I believe on Sunday or on the weekend, we have the game at BMO Field against Jamaica, which is pretty much, I think, the coronation of, it's going to be the game where we qualify or at least clinch. And then Panama away. I'll quickly give my thoughts. I think it'll be really tough for Canada to finish first in the group. Costa Rica and Panama are both fighting for fourth, and they're very desperate, and they're playing at home. So I wouldn't be surprised if Canada loses against Costa Rica, but most likely a tie, still without Alphonso Davies. But we saw just how good Canada was without him. So that's not really a concern, at least to me. The game against Jamaica, I mean, that I think we can chalk up as a win, because Jamaica's got nothing to play for. And Canada's going to be, it's going to be a packed, sold out 31,000 people at BMO. So I think that's going to be a win. And then against Panama, who knows? They might just rest some players and go for a tie. But I think Canada will finish in the top two and qualify directly. It would be great if they finished first so that their ranking could improve and go to pot three, which would be a huge help for the team in Qatar in November. John, I'll get your thoughts. I mean, Canada, I mean, it's a formality at this point, isn't it?
Look, I would never get, you know, I would be tickled pink to say, you know, Canada and Italy in at the same time. We probably may not have the opportunity to see both, but Canada, we talked before we went went live on this podcast, is that Canada has a great shot. They have the most prolific attack in the world in qualifying. We have such a great, there's such a great atmosphere and a camaraderie amongst the guys. The team, I'm not fond of coaching the team. I think that where a lot of this team is succeeding is with the international experience from guys like Tayshaun Buchanan, obviously Jonathan David, and also the one and only Alphonso Davies, and our good old captain and keeper. Oh my God, why is his name escaping me?
Borjan.
Help me out. Borjan, thank you. Who's just an absolute, and I don't know if you guys listened to his interview after the game in Hamilton, and you know how, you know, I made it about the fans, how this is something that, you know, they want to turn around to Canadian soccer and really you know, affect the grassroots level. I thought that was such an amazing point to make, and I think they're creating that next run of players where they're going to get excited and motivated to say, look, these are what these guys did. They haven't done this since 86. I was 9 years old in 86. You know, I'm now a few weeks away from being 45. So this is quite a feat for this Canadian team. I find them to be very strong as a group. Are there weaknesses? Yeah. Their attack is obviously more prolific. With Alphonso Davies not in the lineup, it does obviously significantly weaken the team on whether he plays the right side or left side. It does impact because the level of play and connection with him, Tayshaun Buchanan, with Jonathan David, you're talking about guys who really understand the play. And with key players like Osorio from an experienced and more older crowd, and also, the other statesman of the team. I can't believe Mateo tongue-tied.
Atiba Hutchinson.
Atiba. So you're talking about another gentleman, another player who's just is filling in and doing all the right things in playing for Canada and doing the nitty-gritty and eating. We're talking about minute eaters. He's doing exactly that and giving the opportunity to coaching to really kind of manage the players as they go along. And we're, you know, it looks like Alphonso Davies will be back by the end of April, ready to return to training for both the club and country. So that's going to be amazing and exciting to see. I think you're right. It's going to be hard for them to finish first. I do think it's going to be difficult to win away on Sunday. It should be a formality with a sold out crowd and still a bit of the cold weather lingering. I don't suspect the Jamaicans to really put up a huge fuss for the Canadians. As long as they stay level headed, they will clinch, and we will see the Maple Leaf at the Qatar World Cup.
And James, any thoughts further to add? What are your predictions on the results for the next three games for Canada?
I'm pretty much in agreement with what you said on the wins, and then probably go for the tie against Panama at the end. The only kind of drawback is I do know that they try to get Alphonso Davies to come with the team, to join the team, but apparently Bayern's doctors kiboshed it, and they wanted to keep him home for some of their medical care and not to visit with the team. But it would have been a great experience, especially for someone who was just key for the team in this build-up, so that he can be there when they actually finally do clinch the World Cup. But he's going to be, like, my prediction, once Canada makes it, he's going to be the breakout star of Qatar. The combination of speed, the combination of being for a country that is not known for soccer, and just get him on the mic. His personality is fantastic. He's huge on TikTok, on his social media. So, you know, Canada's got to help him out and clinch it. So then we'll have a fantastic one in Qatar, and we're going to be used to it here in Canada. You know, when Canada won the gold medal for hockey, we were already outside honking the horns in the cold weather. So we might have to do that World Cup time.
Yeah, a lot of positives here for Canada. I think, yeah, we've got it in the, it really remains to be seen where we finish. I don't think it's in jeopardy. I mean, worst case scenario, we lose all three games, but we're still going to be in that fourth spot against the Oceania winner, which would be New Zealand, which, I mean, no offense to them. You don't want to disrespect any opponent, but we'd handle them quite easily. So I think this is going to be the beginning of, like, the next 12 years. You're going to see Canada in the World Cup for the next four cycles, most likely, especially with guys like Marshall Ruddy and Luca Petrasso and Dominic Piro, or excuse me, I butchered his name, but another Italian-Canadian TFC Academy player who was recently called up, I think, the last window. So there's a lot of young players that are coming up and not that the core is old. I mean, they're all under 22, which is amazing. So it's really exciting time to be a fan of soccer in this country. And this is just the beginning. Like, we're going to get used to, everybody's listening, get used to it, because Canada's going to be in the World Cup from now until 2034. So, you know, in 6 years, or, like, you know, 8 years from now, it'll be, it's the expectation that Canada will make it. So it's just the beginning of a long run. And, you know, maybe in 12 years or 10 years from now, we'll look back at this old recording and say, like, yeah, you know, our team has come so far, and look where we were in 2022 when we weren't even sure if they would make it or not. So really positive things. I mean, we ended off the last topic of Italy not qualifying on a more somber note, but at least for our, you know, the country we're born in here, at least, you know, things have finally looked up, and it's really exciting to be a part of it. And we're actually really excited to host a watch party this Thursday at 551 Javelin Drive. So it's open for our members. Come by, watch the Italy game with us, and, you know, let's cheer on the Azzurri to win. And if we beat Macedonia, we'll be doing another watch party for the next opponent. So again, if you want to come by, watch a game with us, that's 551 Javelin Drive in Woodbridge, jofctoronto.com. If you want to sign up and be a member and join us, that pretty much wraps it up for our show. For myself, Joe, John, and James, thank you so much for joining us on episode 19. Follow us on social media. We're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. The 6 Yard Box, just type it in, you'll find us. And we look forward to hearing from you next time. So as always, how we ended off, fino alla fine, forza Juventus. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.